Welcome to NFCC's Guide Through the Seasons of Mental Wellness. I'm your host, Anna Crane, a licensed social worker and outreach counselor at Nick Finnegan Counseling Center here in Houston, Texas.
You are not alone. Saying this to someone who is struggling may be the most comforting thing that you could say to them. There are 8 billion people on this earth. Of course we're not alone, but there are times in life when it certainly feels like we are. Times when it may be difficult to talk about what you're going through. In this season of the Seasons of Mental Wellness, we get vulnerable and talk about how to overcome struggles, struggles that are more common than you may think, with someone who's been through it. I'm your host, Anna Crane. Now let's get into today's episode. Welcome, Jay. Let's start by telling our listeners a little bit about you. Tell us about you and your journey and everything that you would like to start with sharing with us about who you are.
Sure. First of all, thanks for having me on the podcast. I'm honored that you asked me to do it. My name's Jay Magnus. I'm from Houston. My wife and I live here, and we've got 2 little boys. And obviously, the topic of this podcast is substance abuse. And I've had a journey with that in my life, struggled with it in my teenage years and then into my early 20s, found sobriety February 23rd of 2014.
Oh, wow. We just had an anniversary.
Yeah, so we just hit a decade
last month.
Yeah, thank you very much. So it's been quite the journey with ups and downs, a lot of challenges, but a lot of joy in between. And so just honored to be on here in this platform and be able to share kind of my experience, strength, and hope with people that hopefully someone who listens to this can find some hope in this that they can take away and hopefully get the help that they need.
Yeah. I mean, I think that this season is all about making sure that people don't feel alone, right? Like feeling connected to, I'm not the only person who struggles with substance use, right? I'm not the only person who has walked this path and maybe faltered in this path. And I think facing addiction can feel really scary, right? And so when did you decide to make changes and how did you go about that?
So I think that's a really appropriate topic for this as well, just the fact that the feeling alone. And I think when I was experiencing, let's call it active addiction, it's really hard to articulate that's the feeling that you're experiencing. It's very isolating. So I think for me, it felt like you almost have this terminal uniqueness to your peers or your family members, that you're experiencing this desperation of hope and this cycle that you can't seem to break, but you have these thoughts that you really wish that you could change.
But so you feel like you had an awareness to it?
100% towards at least the last 18 months of using. I was very conscious that I wanted to make a change. I was unsure of how I could actually do that. And also just being vulnerable enough to share with friends and family, hey, I need help. Because there's a lot of shame involved with it too. Like, why is this happening to me? I cannot get any kind of control on this. Even waking up, I very vividly remember in my last 12 months of using, waking up every day and feeling like I am not going to participate in this today.
Really?
And within hours, it was on me. I had little to zero control over it. Yeah. And so it was extremely isolating.
Yeah. Do you mind sharing like what was the thing that you were using the most?
Sure. I was using opiates the most.
Okay.
I was also using marijuana, alcohol, but mainly opiates on a daily basis for, call it, the last 18 months.
Right. Okay. So do you feel like there was like a day that you decided, okay, this is the day, or was there an event that happened that made you feel like, okay, I'm aware of this, like you shared. And then you were like, okay, this is what it is. That means like, I don't have an option to not make a change.
So I would probably classify it as there was episodes along the way.
Okay.
And that were pretty apparent to me that there were some serious issues going back to college. So when I got sober, I was 22. So I was fairly young. So I got sober 8 months after I graduated from college.
Wow, yeah.
And I had moments in college where either peers that maybe I was running around with that maybe partaked in some of the things that I did, not to the level that I did, but would almost come to me in confidence like, hey, I think you may have a problem. And to me at that time, it felt, you have no business sharing that with me. But those conversations always stuck with me.
Yeah. When that was happening, like when other people were noticing, what was your typical response, like reaction internally, right? Like you would say like, oh no, you're doing it too. But like, what was your, when internally, do you feel like it was like slowly ticking away at the idea of like, oh, maybe I do need it? Or were you defensive? Like, what was your typical response?
I don't know that I was outwardly defensive, but I think internally I was trying to figure out any way to rationalize that what I'm doing is okay, because I was constantly trying to change the way I felt. So those conversations, although internally I may immediately react, I can't believe this person's saying to me these things, they have no ground to stand on. But I knew that there was some merit to it.
Yeah.
So it was almost like, I'm also a very conflict avoidant person. So I've like found that out through therapy. Right. And so most of the time, and I can't speak for my friends, like this is over a decade ago, but I would think that I probably responded in a way of like, hey, I appreciate you saying that, but like, I'm okay.
Yeah.
Just kind of like, hey, I hear you. I validate what you're saying, but also like, I don't want to get into this any further because
I don't want to be in conflict with you.
Yeah. I don't want to be in conflict with you. And then there was also other areas and events that happened where when I had like a health scare at the end of college where I had a seizure.
Oh my gosh.
Like right before I graduated.
Wow.
And some of the substances I was using and like the lack of sleep from trying to cram studying, you know, obviously if I'm actively using drugs, I'm not necessarily taking care of my school so I'm trying to cram in the sense of maybe I was taking Adderall or something to study really quickly on top of taking other drugs. And so this was having a very bad effect on my health and ultimately led to me having a seizure, which was a something I could not really run from. Like I had to face that on for at least like a week or 2 weeks, whether that was with family or friends. And then kind of once the dust settled a little bit, it was like, okay, I'm going to tell everyone that I'm going to tame it back. And even at this point, I wasn't really ready to do that. But I was like, I can hide this a little bit better and we'll see where this plays out. Yeah. And then it was really when I graduated college and I started working that I wasn't making very much money, but it was like the first time that I had money. So I was like, okay, I can kind of do what I want. I'm not like, it's not like I have an allowance that I'm pulling from, so my parents can see my habits of spending. And I think that became very apparent to my parents because I was living at home at the time. So like there were some things that they were starting to notice. And really, I think my mom and my dad both, like they noticed some things, but also I think it's hard as parents to see, you know, your son graduated with a finance degree in 4 years. He did decently well. Yes, there were some episodes along the way, but he was in college. Maybe this is a phase. Yeah. And so I think there was a little bit of denial from them, which I totally get as a parent now. And so really there was just a couple episodes. And then I got caught stealing some of my money from my parents. And that was a little bit of a tipping point for them. And something I couldn't really run away from at that point. Like they would not let it go at that point, which was really a huge moment for me to almost like come clean with them. And really in that moment when I did come clean with them, I was met with such love from both of them, which I think was super important.
Yeah, that's so important. And I feel like relatively rare that it's like, okay, you know what? We're going to just handle this as a unit instead of feeling, you know, okay, I'm coming to you and somebody's mad, you know? I think that that is a huge piece of community and how they responded to you. What did that feel like when they did respond with love?
I think it was a huge relief to me because, like I said in the beginning, there's so much isolation in active addiction and shame. And so with both of them meeting me at a place of love, there was obviously anger and frustration on their part too. But as their child, they deeply loved me and they wanted me to get help. So I feel like there was almost a huge weight lifted off of me that like, okay, I've almost let this out of the bag now. There's not a ton of running that I can do from this. But even for the weeks to follow, when we started talking to people in the community that were either at church or mental health professionals that could help kind of guide our family through this process, like, where can we get Jay to so that he can get into a healthier place?
Yeah.
Even having in that moment, having good intentions of wanting to get help, I'm still in active addiction and right. trying the best I can, but it almost ramped up for me at that really? Point, which is like a very interesting yeah. dynamic.
Like, you knew it was almost like, did you feel like it was like, this is my last chance, or like they all know now, or it was just like, I'm just very out of control.
I think the best way for me to articulate it is like, obviously my family is very aware of what's happening right. now. So there's daily conversations about this, like where I'm going to go to treatment, like how can I get help? And me having the best intentions in those conversations with them that like I want to get better, but it was almost like, okay, this is also like my last hurrah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like y'all are nagging me. I know it's ending and almost like, okay, it's like what people do when they're, and this is a much smaller version, but almost when they're like dieting or they know like, okay, January 1st, I'm going to start Whole 30. So today I'm going to order a pizza, right? It's almost like that, right? It's like the last, you know, last hope.
I had several days of cheat meals. Yes, yes, exactly. Like that's right, that's right, exactly right, right. what it was like. Like, and I could look my parents in the eye with the best of intentions and say like, because they really wanted me like, hey, you should stop everything for the next few days. Because once we figured out where I was going to go to treatment, I had yeah. like a 5 to 6 day period where okay. I was just going to be at home, figure things out at home with work and everything before I transitioned into going away for a few weeks.
Right.
And I remember looking them in the eye and having the best intentions, like, yes, I'm not going to do anything, but it was just so on me.
Well, and it's so, a disease.
Yeah. Yeah. And so hard to, at least for me, I can only speak for myself, but like without the removal of where I was, the
access, probably
the access that I had, yeah. it was really tough for me.
Yeah. And I would say, you know, I have family members who have struggled with addiction, and I would say that that is a pretty common thread. And in, well, I'm still in my same environment. Like, it's very hard to change what's going on if I'm like, haven't received treatment yet, haven't sought help out yet. But I'm like, nothing else has changed other than like, there's an awareness to this, you know? And so when you did decide, okay, I'm going, you know, I'm going today, and it's that moment, how do you feel like that had an impact on your mental health? Like, and just the idea of like going into it?
I think for me, there was a lot of peace
okay.
mentally yeah. that, okay, I have, not that I did this on my own. There were some circumstances that kind of pushed me into right. this place, but I was grateful for it because I was like, this is my way out.
Wow. Yeah.
But also, I think there was, from a negative side of my mental health, I think there was a lot of shame that I just was holding on to so much about how my peers viewed me.
Yeah.
Which was extremely difficult for me because, and what I kind of learned as I began the process was just like, look, like time takes time. It's going to take a long time for people to almost like view you in a different light.
Right.
And you can't right. do that all in one day.
Right.
So,
for that, anything.
Yeah. And that was a little bit overwhelming for me too. Like yeah. I was very nervous about what people would think of me, but also super like naive to think that not all my friends knew that these things were going on with me. Like there right. were signs a long time ago. So
yeah.
it's a little bit of a weird dynamic that you're experiencing.
Yeah. It's probably like, oh, I'm this charismatic, fun party guy. Everybody's experiencing kind of some level of this in college, and maybe they didn't know. And then it's like, wait, what? You're going to rehab or you're going to treatment? Like, what does that mean? And probably to an extent, what does that mean for me? As your friend, what if I did a lot of that stuff? Do I need, you know, and just kind of that piece of facing, you know, what's going on with you, facing it with themselves.
100%. I think there was some of the same people that probably had conversations with me in college or even post-college that were concerned for me that I felt like, hey, maybe they don't have that much ground to stand on and have this direct of a conversation with me.
Yeah.
Their conversations with me when I was going to treatment were like, oh man, do you really need to do that? Like, are you sure? Like, ooh, yeah. maybe this is just a phase. And And look, my parents, like, I wouldn't trade anything for the way that they handled that situation, because I feel like it really put me in a good spot mentally to go do what I needed to do to get better. But like, I also do think there was part of them that was like kind of forward thinking, like, what is this going to look like for Jay's life in the future? Yeah. Like, he's never going to drink again. Like, is this going to set him apart from his peers? Like, how is this going to set him up, like, at work, just in terms of, you know, business development, all these things that I think that, like, there was stuff starting to creep in, like, okay, this is, like, really happening. Like, he's going to go to treatment and he's going to go get help and we want him to get help. But what is this going to look like going forward? Like, is this just like he needs to take some time off? And I think that was really hard.
Yeah. And I think that that is probably a big theme in the becoming sober. And I think you're talking a lot about, like, how your community showed up for you, right? Like, your parents were supportive, but worried about, like, all the implications. Your friends were maybe not always supportive because they thought, you know, maybe they were internally facing what they were experiencing themselves, or they thought, like, it probably isn't that bad because they're not internally experiencing what you're experiencing, and or have a lack of awareness to it. And I think in general, the theme of this is like, this is a major lifestyle shift. That's not only a lifestyle shift, but it's a health shift too. And I think that that's a piece of, like, substance use and sobriety that people have a hard time understanding, is like, they think it's a choice. Do you feel like when you were in it, did you even feel like it was a choice, or did you feel like it was like almost shackles to, I am a using and I have to use to continue?
It very much felt like I was in shackles. Like, there was not a lot of choice I had once those substances were in my body. And then there's obviously physical effects too of when you're trying to stop.
Yeah.
Whether that's withdrawals or, which some of that I experienced a lot of. And so it's just, well, I know how to fix this. I'm going to use again. Not only is it going to fix that physical effect that I'm feeling, but it's also going to fix temporarily changing the way that I feel. And I think a lot of it, as I, like, as I grew on this journey, was, you know, so much of, like, doing, like, inner child work and, like, therapy and figuring out, like, you were trying to always change the way you felt, but, like, why is that? And I think for me, it was like, a growing up, I was very insecure and, you know, like, you know, I was pretty good at sports and played a lot of sports, was, had good friends, all these things, but, like, still just, like, not feeling good enough, feeling insecure. And so, like, those first times that I experienced drugs, I was like, this is what I've been looking for my whole life. Like, this is giving me the confidence, taking away those feelings. Like, how can I maintain this and act like a gentleman from this point forward? And it works for a while until it doesn't.
Right.
That's really what kind of transpired into later into college and then living at home and some of these things that I've talked about happening, where I was like, this is not working.
So how do you feel like you can maintain that now, being, you know, has, how has the last 10 years changed who you are and your community and the way that you can, you know, be that person that you always thought, like, oh, the drugs are going to help me be that person. Like, now you are that person, but in a sober place, right?
So I talked about some of the, like, the conversations that friends had maybe had with me while I was using, that maybe I didn't appreciate at the time. But I also had some friends that, like, I really respected, and all these, you know, guys and girls, like, I deeply cared about. So, like, valued their opinion. And I think what was happening once I got sober was I was getting educated on myself, why I'm feeling this way, what I am doing to make myself not feel this way. And really, I kind of found out pretty quickly that everything that I was looking for in drugs and alcohol was really like making all those things much worse. Like, it was it was a temporary fix. And then once I got sober, it was challenging to reintegrate, like, just to get back into a social setting. I mean, I was 22 years old. Like, I was single. And at that time, it was hard to go to bars. And so I had to be, like, very careful about that at the beginning. Like, I don't want to put myself in situations where I'm going to feel compromised. And
how did your community show up for you in that those moments? Like, who do you feel like there were, like, certain people who are like, it's cool, we don't need to go to a bar, we can do X, Y, Z? Or do you feel like, did you feel alone in those moments?
Well, I will say, like, one of my best friend in the world does not drink.
Yeah.
And I think that was extremely important to me because I spent so much time with him already.
Yeah.
That there wasn't a always like a social aspect of we need to go to this bar on Friday and Saturday night. Like, right. And go meet up with people. And my friends that did do that, they were super respectful of me.
That's
there
awesome.
Wasn't like a push for me to go out and like go do these things. They were almost like, we respect so much what you're doing. Like, we want you to be healthy and take care of yourself. And then also, like, just the aspect that I haven't really talked about was, like, I was very involved in, like, a, you know, a sober community, too.
Yeah.
That I would go to meetings regularly. I started meeting people that way. I think from a mental health perspective, like, that was really challenging at first because, like, when I got home from treatment, I had a really good experience. And I think even going into that, I was really thinking, like, this is probably going to be like a really good 3-week break for me. Like, I did not have the ability to really conceptualize, like, this is going to be
a forever
choice. A forever thing. And I still don't even really think about it that way, but just really like, hey, when I wake up today, like, I'm going to really do everything I can to not, you know, use or drink.
Yeah.
And so when I just had a really good experience in treatment, when I got back, I didn't really know anyone who was sober. The best friend that I'm talking about, his dad had been sober for a long time.
Okay,
So I immediately met up with him and he connected me with like some older gentlemen that were going to these meetings and they like essentially just drug me around for months. Like I was spending my time with guys that were in their 50s and 60s going to dinners at 6 p.m. and then going to meetings. And like that was super helpful for me. And I did that all the time.
Yeah. Well, and it is, it's like, I think in these moments, our community might not be who we think it's going to be, or our support system might not be who we think it's going to be, but it's the people that we need in the moment, right? And I think that there are pieces of that that are so unique and so special to your experience. But also, I think, like, I've had clients who are in their sobriety journey, and so often, you know, the first meeting that they go to, they're like, I don't belong there. Those people don't look like me. That's not, or act like me, or whoa, they like hit rock bottom and I'm just trying to regulate. Did you have that experience at your first couple of meetings, or were you like so ready for it that you were like, or you went with those people that were taking you there that you felt like, okay, well, at least I'm not alone here?
So we went to a few outside meetings when I was in treatment. So I had like a little bit of exposure to it before. And I think what was helpful for me was what Jay has done his whole life has gotten him to this point. So I am going to sit down, have my ears open and my mouth closed, and listen to these other people and take suggestions and recommendations on what to do. Yeah. Because I can look around these rooms that I'm in and just see that a lot of these people have what I want.
Yeah.
Like they have stability, clarity, peace.
Yeah.
They're serene. Of course, everyone has their challenges, but like everything that Jay has done up until this point in his life has got him to this place. So I think just having that frame of mind, it diluted those thoughts a little bit. Because there's certainly, you hear someone share their story and you're like, I cannot relate to that.
Right.
But if I looked at it from the perspective, I could really relate to how that person's feeling.
Mm, yes. And I love what you said about the fact that these people have certain qualities that I'm seeking out, right? Like I think especially the peace and stability, I think people in general in life are seeking those things out. And so seeking a community where you can find those values that you have in others is important, right? Like it's a, it helps propel you forward in a way that like you might not otherwise. Do you feel like your community at large showed up for you in a way that like once you were sober, like over the last 10 years, how has that community changed? Has it stayed the same? Has it been different? Like, are you still feeling like, okay, I'm going to go hang out with those guys on Friday night? Or, you know, what does community look like now in 10 years of sobriety?
So I would say my community now is still relatively the same. I still attend meetings. I still have, you know, some of the closest people in my life I've met through, you know, that fellowship of people.
Yes.
Like I can look at the men that were in my wedding. One of them was my sponsor.
Wow.
Three or four of the other guys are all people that I've grown with through that fellowship.
Yeah.
And so that just became an extremely, well, I'll just call it the most important aspect of my life, because I knew that if I wanted a different trajectory for my life, I was going to need to stay on this path.
Right.
And I think, you know, in year one, it was challenging to go out and kind of reintegrate myself with the same people.
Yeah.
Not because of I didn't deeply care about them and they didn't deeply care about me.
Right.
It was just I was feeling uncomfortable. But then it got to a point where I almost felt more comfortable being sober because I was getting rid of the shame of how I was behaving before. And I was starting to almost get validation from my peers, like, and a lot of respect from people.
Yes, of, I'm sure.
For what I was doing. And so my community now has definitely changed a little bit in the sense of, like, I have two kids,
right.
Married. Yeah. I had none of those things when I got sober. So,
right.
Like, the frequency of me going to dinner with, you know,
right.
10 guys on a Wednesday night at 6 p.m., like, does not happen
right.
often. But, you know, thank goodness for cell phones and just staying in
yeah.
contact with those
yeah.
guys is super important. And I think just it's the program is for me is a lot about just like honesty and being vulnerable.
Yeah.
Like, it, me having the ability to have that community to communicate to those people what's going on in my life takes a lot of the power out of it,
yeah,
of what's
wow.
really happening. Because it's, again, it's that same thing I was experiencing in active addiction. It's this isolation. You're not talking about it. You feel like you're the only one going through it. There's no way you can get out of it. So just these daily struggles that happen, because life happens for everyone, whether you're sober, you're not sober. And
right.
so I think just being able to pick up the phone and just be like, hey, so-and-so, this is what's going on with me. Having a really hard time here. And then just immediately feeling better. And then doing the exact opposite, listening
right.
to people.
Yes,
like
totally.
Trying to help someone else.
Yes.
Like, that is the best medicine for this whole program of sobriety. Like,
right.
I want them to serve others.
Yes.
And so that's really kind of how my community is like formed and kind of stayed in place up to this point.
Well, and I feel like even doing this podcast, right? Like, mm-hmm. you're spreading knowledge and awareness to your story, and that's hugely vulnerable, and I so appreciate it. I think something that I want to make sure we touch on is people might be listening to this not experiencing substance use or addiction themselves, but supporting someone they love, right? Like, I always think whenever I'm experiencing something or my best friend is experiencing something and I want to support her, I try and think through like, okay, well, I haven't done that myself, but who do I know who's gone through that and can give me some tips on how to support them? So what are some ways that you feel like people supported you and we can tell the people who are being supportive of people in their addiction? I know this is like a convoluted way of getting there, but like, how can we tell people, like, what are tips you would give to someone who's supporting someone who's struggling with this?
Well, I think that just like number one, when you have a family member or a friend who's going through addiction, it's affecting a wide group of people, because the first thing that you want to do is solve their problem for them. Generally, I mean, I just
yeah.
feel that way with people in my life.
Yeah.
Like, I haven't talked a lot about my sister or my brother, but like, as part of that family nucleus, like, they were super supportive of me as well.
Yeah.
And my brother's been sober for 8 years
wow,
now too.
Yeah.
So I think that looking at it holistically, that it's not just this individual that's the one who's having this issue, but it affects everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, what do I tell people who have a family member? Because I've gotten a lot of calls over the past decade,
sure.
like, hey, I have a friend struggling, or, you know, my spouse or my son, daughter is struggling. Like, what do we do? And I think I feel super lucky that, because there's a lot of people who just have challenges throughout this thing
right.
of sobriety. And I feel very lucky that I've, up to this point, had a good run at
right.
doing this thing. And I think just telling people that, I always tell families that you want to put that family member and your family as a whole in a good situation to have success for that individual and yourself.
Right.
So, like, reaching out to someone like a Nick Finnegan Counseling Center, where you're engaging with mental health professionals that are very knowledgeable on this topic and how to navigate it. Because
yeah.
the challenges that oftentimes happen is that the person who's struggling with the active addiction They may be willing at a time, but that can fluctuate where their willingness diminishes. And how do you navigate that? Because it's really challenging. If that individual does not want to get help, it is very, very hard. And that just happens. But so I say, like, putting them in an environment with at a Nick Finnegan or other, you know, treatment centers and getting them with the right professionals, I think you're just giving, your odds are increasing that maybe you have an aha moment or that you're hearing communication that is helpful to get to the other side.
Yeah, absolutely. I so appreciate that because I have multiple, like I said, I have multiple family members who are now sober, and I feel like it's, even the small check-ins along the way have felt very, like I have a family member who always says, like, the fact that you always ask, like, hey, how's it going? Mm-hmm. You know, that really means a lot to me because you're not questioning me. You're not, you know, checking in a way that feels like you're checking on me, but you're in a, like, a naggy way. Mm-hmm. You're checking on me just like as a whole person. And that feels a lot better than asking very directed, pointed questions. Whereas, like, maybe some other people wouldn't want that. Yeah. But, you know, I think it is individualized, and asking people, how are you doing, or how would you like me to support you through this? They might not know yet, right? Like, if they're deep in it, they might be like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But just an awareness to it. And I think something to, like, retouch on the fact that you said, like, I was met with love. I wasn't met. I mean, of course, anger and frustration were there as well, because they are, especially with a parent-child relationship, mm-hmm, most of the time.
Yes.
But, like, I think as the supporter, understanding, like, I am the safe person that you shared this information with. You know, I tell parents that all the time, even with their younger kids, when this is something that's happening in high school, you know, I always say, like, look, when they share something with you, you have to just receive it, because it took a lot for them to share it with you.
100%. And I think that, you know, outside of just my immediate family, like, kind of my immediate family has changed now.
Yeah.
I'm married and I've almost been married for 6 years, and with two children now, it's like I look at how my wife has showed up for me, even have had a little bit of sobriety under my belt before we started dating and got married, but just understanding who I am as a person and who she, we're very different, like completely different. She is very in tune with her emotions, like, knows how she feels, why she feels this way. It's very hard for me to articulate that.
Yes, yes.
Like, even if I look at kind of how my sobriety story started, it was, like, not something that I came to the table and was like, hey, I'm struggling with this. It was like, hey, I did something wrong. Y'all found out. I guess I should say something, maybe. Like,
yes, yes.
And my wife has always been just, like, amazing in checking in with me and, like, asking me those questions that aren't super direct,
right,
but just, like, communicate and just, like, being a huge support to me. And I think when you're trying to help others, you just have to think about it from the vantage point. Like, I can't fix this person, but, like, I can be there for them, and there's nothing that I can say that's going to take away their pain.
Yes.
But what was super important for me was that I knew that there was people that were there for me.
Yes.
Like, that were telling me, I love you no matter what.
Yes.
I'm here for you. I know this is extremely challenging for you, and we're going to be here to support you. And I think, like, foundationally, that's extremely important, because even in communication with my wife now, like, she may come to me just want to vent about something. But, yes, like, my immediate reaction is, like, okay, how can I fix this? But, like, that's not at all what she wants.
She's like,
nor
just listen.
Exactly. And it's like, it's the same way if you're trying to help someone who maybe is struggling with substance abuse. It's
right,
it's going to be really hard for you to just fix it for that person, to,
right,
like, go put them in a treatment center and get in their own head and tell them, like, you need to do this, you need to do this. Really, it's just a support system. Like, I hear you. I know that you're struggling. Like, I want to do everything I can to be there with you, and I love you. Like, that is probably what I thought, at least for my parents, my brother and sister, was super important for me in the beginning, and my friends.
Yeah. Something that you touched on that I wanted to make sure, like, I think a lot of it, people, when they're supporting someone, you know, their family is such a strong support system, and it is so great that your brother is sober too, right? Like, that is probably, this is me making an assumption, a great support system for you. Is that true? Or do you feel like it's like, there was this dynamic of, are you the older brother?
I'm the older, so I'm the middle.
Okay.
I'm the middle child, and Bobby, my brother, is 13 months younger than me.
Okay, so
close. Like, very close in age.
Yes.
And I'm closer to him than anyone in my entire life. Right. And we obviously have this extremely unique bond of yes. sobriety, which is extremely important.
Right.
Because it just gives us this extremely deep level of connectivity. Not that we didn't already have that, right. just because we grew up playing sports together. We have a lot of the same friends. Yeah. We went to school together. But when you are young and you get sober, you have to you grow up very quickly. So
yeah,
because I was taking away everything that I was coping with and immediately trying to do better. And I can like look back on it and have like a lot of just like be proud of myself. It's really like I'm hard on myself as like an addict, and it's just I'm you know, I can be very hard on myself and all these insecurities that I may have of not feeling good enough. And I look at my brother and I can look at him or my other peers that are sober, and I can be so proud of them.
Yes.
Like deeply appreciate what they have done, how they've shown up for me. That's a little bit long-winded, and to say that like having, you know, blood, like my brother go through this with me is extremely impactful and just gives me almost like a deeper appreciation that we're extremely blessed up to this point. Like we still battle with other things, and this is a, you know, every single day you have to try to do it again, and like days add up, and that's how you get, you know, you can't walk in and be sober 1 year after your first day, you know, it's just days on days. And just having him by my side when he came in was super important. And it's like even doing stuff like this, like being able to kind of share my story is a way for me to help others, but it also like reminds me of where I was and gives me a deep sense of gratitude.
Right. Well, and I think like you should be proud of yourself, right? And you should be. And I think it is easy when you see it in other people to be like, oh, wow, I'm so proud of them. Like that's so hard. But when it's yourself, you're like, well, I don't know. Should I be proud of me? Because I shouldn't have been here in the first place, or, you know, whatever it is. And I think acknowledging for our listeners that like it is a step-by-step process. It is a moment-by-moment, not even day-by-day choice that you're actively making every day to be sober. And I think that that's so important, and it is something to be proud of. Like I, you know, have grown up around so many people who've also struggled with this. And I think about like my brother-in-law has been sober for 13 years. And he, you know, I knew him. He started dating my sister when he was not sober. And now they have two beautiful little girls. And I'm so, and every day I think about how proud I am and how I'm like, oh my gosh, look at the father that you are and the person that you are and the support to my sister that you are that I wasn't sure you might be, you know, before you were sober. And I think, I don't know if I tell him that enough. Like even this is making me think like I need to text him after this. But I think it's a good reminder to the people who are supporting and loving on people who are going through this that like it is an everyday experience. 10 years is surely different than day one, but it's still another day, you know?
100%. I mean, I just think from day one to now, just the external things happening in my life are completely different.
Right.
So navigating though, like sometimes you can almost feel like, and I don't want this to come off as like negative or something or like discouraging to people, but like you experience different things in your life the older you get.
Right.
Like if you create your own family. And so like being 10 years sober at this point, I may experience something in my life that makes me feel like I'm like, you know, 30 days sober. And I'm like, this is really hard. This is making me feel extremely challenged.
So
but like there's so many cliches in recovery, sobriety in those rooms that like really just hit me right between the eyes. And it's just like time takes time.
Yeah.
And you just have to do kind of the blocking and tackling of this deal. So like when I experience these things and 10 years down the road, I pick up the phone, maybe I call my brother or another person that I'm really close with. This is what's going on with me. I feel some relief. It's just doing those things day in, day out, because life is going to continue happening.
Yeah.
While like a drink and a drug may feel further away from me at this point in my life, it may not be the first thing that's coming to my mind when I'm having a challenge, but I also know that if I don't do some of these things that I've been doing since day one, it's really not far away.
Right. Right.
And so that's always something for me that I'm trying to be very mindful of, because if you stay sober for a period of time and you're engaged in a program and a fellowship, like, you see it happen where people yes. have sobriety and their slips. That's just part of it. It's, yeah. you know, it's a hard, hard disease, and yes. it's baffling and kind of and powerful. And it's just, it's a challenge.
Yeah. And I don't think that's, I want to just affirm you. Like, I don't think that that sounds negative. I think it sounds incredibly realistic. And I do think it's important to note that it's not just like all rainbows and butterflies now, mm-hmm. right? It is like this, you know, I think often when you love someone who's experienced it too, right, you can say, oh gosh, you know, I don't want it. I don't want to be thinking about you as a ticking time bomb. Like, this hard thing happens. And now, oh gosh, are you going to falter? How can I support you to make sure that that doesn't happen? Mm-hmm. You know, like, I do think that that's incredibly realistic. And so I appreciate you bringing that up, because it isn't just this like, oh, you know what? I'm sober and now I'm serene and that's it. And it's over. Right. Like, I think it is important to acknowledge that. So it doesn't sound negative at all.
Yeah. No, I didn't. Yeah. It's just, this is a little bit off topic, but I've been thinking about this. It was like, when you start off on your journey to sobriety, right. whether yeah. it was me or someone else, I can really only speak from my experience, but it was like, you had been living a life that you were not doing very many things that were esteemable things. Yeah. And a lot of that is the way to build up your self-confidence is you do esteemable things. You act like a good friend, yeah. a good son, yeah. a good husband, a good yeah. father. And that stuff starts to build up for you. And for me, just like, that was extremely important to almost have it broken down to me very simplistic early on. Like, look, you're not going to get all these things like right now.
Yes.
Like, you're not going to get the respect from your peers. You're not going to get the trust from your family right away. Like, yeah. you may feel great at 30 days sober, but like, that is not enough that time. Long of time from where you were.
Right.
And so you just need to continue to do esteemable things like day by day, and don't look towards like, man, I can't wait to have like this amount of sobriety, or like right. just waking up, like thanking God and just, I'm going to have let go of everything and try to just stay sober today. And then just right. being grateful at the end of the day that it happened, because you're going to have struggles along the way. And that's just part of it. And that's the importance of community.
Totally. And I think that that is like such an incredibly good wrap on everything we've talked about. And I think it is just so amazing that you are where you are. You should be really proud of yourself. And I know that people who love you are proud of you. And I'm just so thankful for you sharing your story with us and you being here today.
No, I really appreciate it. Like I said, it's when I got into recovery, there was my first sponsor. He's still my sponsor, actually. He just told me, if you ever have an opportunity to serve, whether that's chairing a meeting or a newcomer calls you, do the best that you can to say yes to those things. Yeah. Because not only are you going to have the ability to help someone else, it is going to help you. It's almost a very weird, selfish thing to do, to like have acceptance of like these opportunities. So like, I am very grateful to do this and appreciate your validation. And it's an honor.
Well, now I'm going to challenge you with okay. this rapid fire five. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay, great. I'm ready. Okay. First question. Community is?
Crucial.
Oh, yes. Second one. If you could read one book or listen to one podcast on repeat, other than this one, of course, what would it be?
I'm not a huge reader.
Okay.
I have read a handful of books over the past few years, but I could not pick one.
Okay.
Podcasts, I really like Armchair Expert,
yes.
which is Dax Shepard, who he's an actor and a writer and director, and he's been sober for a long time. And yes. that, like, as a, in a period of time in my sobriety, I think I was 4 or 5 years sober when he started his podcast, and he would bring guests on, and it was very much this dialogue, like connecting, being vulnerable, sharing their story. And I just so appreciated that and yes. was so drawn to that.
Yes.
And it helped me so much. Again, you talk about this, the theme of this is like the feeling alone.
Right.
in any mediums where you can get that, whether I'm in my car listening to a podcast, I'm like, oh, this, you know, Bradley Cooper was on the podcast talking about the exact, you know, he's been sober a long time, talking about the exact same things that I feel.
Right. Totally. And that,
like,
is community.
I'm never going to have a conversation with him, but like, I don't feel as alone because I'm in my car and I'm listening to it. And so, like, I really like those types of podcasts. I have sports podcasts I like too. And, you know. I'm a big fan of Pardon My Take.
Yeah. Well, I think those are both very realistic and honest answers. And I appreciate it. And Dax Shepard is just fun to listen to.
Yeah.
Okay. The best version of self-care for you personally is?
Probably exercising.
Yeah. Love that. Yeah. What's your favorite exercise?
I like to run.
Awesome.
And I like to put in a podcast and go run for a little
bit. There you go. Yeah. See? Okay. What's one thing you are proud of?
My sobriety.
Yeah.
I just think sometimes it's hard for me internally to even just be like that direct about what am I proud about, saying like just my sobriety. But it's like, because of that, I've been so blessed to have met my wife, who's amazing, and have two beautiful sons, and have relationships with my family, and show up as a coworker. And it's just propelled me to, in so many different avenues of life, to be such a better version of myself. So, like, that's really the foundation of it.
Yes, yeah. I love that. Okay, one thing you are deeply grateful for.
Again, I would just say my sobriety, but I'll take it, like, from a more, like, just personal, like, my wife and kids, 100%. Yeah. Like, as I've gotten older and, like, have created my own family and experienced different things, challenges in my life, whether that's with other family members or, you know, work dynamics, those are the people that I'm always with constantly.
Yeah.
And those relationships are so important.
Yeah.
And I could not be where I am, especially without my wife, but just having those two little boys too that, like, give me a completely different meaning in my life and appreciation for everything has turned my world upside down in a completely better way. So.
That's amazing. She's going to love listening to this. She's like, I'm such a good wife. That's awesome. Well, Jay, I so appreciate you for being here today and taking time out of your busy schedule. I am so excited for people to hear your story and feel connected and feel less alone. And I think you did that for them today. And we're just so grateful to you.
I really appreciate it. And I would say to the people who are going to listen, feel free to reach out to me at any point in time. I'd be more than happy to have a conversation with someone about this, because it certainly, when I was going through it, I didn't know that that was an option. I wasn't aware that other people had similar struggles. So more than anything, I would love to be a resource for anybody in the community that may listen to this who needs help.
Yeah. So if you are listening and you would like to connect with Jay, you can reach out to NFCC and we can make sure that you get connected. We hope you have a great day. Bye.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and would like to help us reach more listeners, please share it with someone you know, post about it on social media, and leave a rating or a review. To see what's coming next, follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Nick Finn Counsel, or visit our website at finnegancounseling.org. Before I go, I'd also like to thank the people who made this project possible. My wonderful friends and guest experts who joined me each episode, our production team at Three Wire Creative, our editor, Giselle Dixon, and the amazing leadership team and supporters at Nick Finnegan Counseling Center in Houston, Texas. Until next time.